Bhakti Bhaktivinoda Swami Nityam Namaste Saraswati Devi Gauravani Pachani Namaste Sindhavati Paskutyavi Satani Vandeha Shri Guru Chantapadakamalam Shri Guru Vaishnavishta Shri Guru Pamsai Pachatam Sani Naravadatam Vikam Stam Sajivam Sadvaitam Sajivitam Vijana Sahita Krishna Chaitanya Devam Shri Radha Krishna Chaitanya Sahagana Vita Shri Vishakam Vitam Shri Vanchakapu Chivishtaka Vasilya Vitapti Tim Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya. Sounds breathy to me. Here? Put it here? Is that better? Okay.
Yeah, it's just... I can actually adjust this. Behind.
Is that better? Yeah, no, I don't have the... I mean, Krishna's breathing is nice, right? My breathing is really nice. Okay. March 7, 2015, in Auckland, New Zealand, Canto 1, Chapter 5, Narada's Instructions on Srimad Bhagavatam, Text 38. Itim Rajabhidanena Mantra Murti Mamurtikam Jate Yagya Purusham are all made of material elements, and therefore they are imperfect in realizing the transcendental form of Lord Vishnu. He is therefore worshipped by sound representation via the transcendental method of chanting. Anything which is beyond the scope of experience by our imperfect senses can be realized fully by the sound representation. A person transmitting sound from a far distant place can be factually experienced. If this is materially possible, why not spiritually? The experience is not a vague, impersonal experience. It is actually an experience of the transcendental personality of Godhead, who possesses the pure form of eternity, bliss, and knowledge. In the Amarakosha Sanskrit dictionary, the word murti carries import in twofold meanings, namely form and difficulty. Therefore, amurtikam is explained by Acharya Sri Vishwanath Chakravarti Thakur as meaning, quote, without difficulty, unquote. The transcendental form of eternal bliss and knowledge can be experienced by our original spiritual senses, which can be revived by chanting of the holy mantras or transcendental sound representations. Such sounds should be received from the transparent agency of the bona fide spiritual master, and the chanting may be practiced by the direction of the spiritual master. That will gradually lead us nearer to the Lord. This method of worship is recommended in the Pancharatrika system, which is both recognized and authorized. The Pancharatrika system has the most authorized codes for transcendental devotional service. Without the help of such codes, one cannot approach the Lord, certainly not by dry philosophical speculation. The Pancharatrika system is both practical and suitable for this age of quarrel. This Pancharatra is more important than the Vedanta for this modern age. Iti murtya vidhanena mantra murti amurtikam yajjate yajyapurusam sam yajapdarshanam puman. Thus he is the actual seer who worships in the form of transcendental sound vibration the Supreme Personality of Godhead who has no material form. So this relates very much to the previous verse. What was the previous verse? No, I want to see if anybody can remember it without looking. Om Namo something. Oh, good. It was a mantra. And who was it a mantra to? Yes? Good. As without a material form or without any difficulty. You can approach him in the, if we look here, the mantra murti, the form of the mantra. In the form of the mantra, he is manifest. This is a question, how to find the Lord. So according to polls and statistics, most people on the planet believe that there's a God. You know that, right? The vast majority of people on the planet, if you say, do you believe in God, they will say yes. That just takes a tiny bit of observation and common sense. That's something like, do you believe there was a builder for this building? You know, do you believe everyone in this world has parents? I mean, that's just sort of common sense. Something very, very simple, like this cup is very simple. Do you believe someone created this cup? Well, yes. But when it comes to doing anything about God, or finding God, or having any relationship with God, or knowing about God, then I think we have to say that the majority of people don't do very much. Yeah, I believe that there's a God. What are you doing? Not much. And that is called anushraddha. You have some faith. A God exists, and could I find him? Could I connect with him? Yes. I believe that that's possible. Are you time ago who said, you know, why are you pushing this spiritual path? There's so many spiritual paths. I said, okay. And an hour or two later, I said to him, so what spiritual path are you following? And there was a long silence. And then, oh, I try to be a good person. So that's not a spiritual path. So how are we going to find God? Now, why don't people take up a spiritual path? Well, first of all, it requires some sacrifice. So here, what is Krishna, how is Krishna referred to here in this verse? What's the name of Krishna given here? Yajna Purusha, the personification of sacrifice, which is an interesting topic in and of itself. Why is God the personification of sacrifice? He's often referred to like this. The sacrifice seems to be the antithesis of joy. Krishna says to Lord Brahma, tapaso vidyam sakshat, atmaham tapasa. Anybody have any idea what that means? Anyone have any idea what that means? Tapasa vidyam sakshat, atmaham tapasa.
I am austerity.
I am austerity, yes. Vidyam sakshat. This is the most simple Sanskrit. Vidaya means heart. Sakshat means directly. Tapasa vidaya sakshat would mean austerity is directly my heart. Atmaham is atma aham. Combines becomes atmaham. Atmaham tapasa. My very self is tapasya. Interesting. Tapa means austerity. Means suffering also. It also means heat, like a fire, which is very connected with this yajna. And then anyone know Bhagavad Gita 3.15? Okay, there's a line in there, sarva gatam brahma. That's pretty easy too. What does sarva mean? All, gatam. Places. Brahman is the Brahman. Brahman is everywhere. Nitya yajna pratisthitam. Nitya means eternal. Yajna is sacrifice. Stita means a wood, which is a nishta, to stay, a place. So the all-pervading, Prabhupada translates that, as the all-pervading transcendence is eternally situated in acts of sacrifice. So if you want to actually find God, I have this mental picture of people at Anushradha. They're on. It's like there's a material path and a spiritual path, and they're on the material path, and they say, yeah, I believe there's a spiritual path over there. It's kind of like somebody who eats junk food, and they say, yes, I believe that healthy food exists. And I believe if you eat healthy food, you'll be healthier. Right? By the way, do most of us do this about something in our life? Most of us have something in our life where we say, yes, I believe. I have a belief that doing that such a thing exists, and I have a belief that if I were to act in a certain way, I would find it. But yet I don't do anything about it. Do we do this? Most of us do this. We have certain beliefs that we say are true, and we believe them to be true, but we do not act on them. And generally we don't act on them because acting on them requires some sort of sacrifice. So the first sacrifice to find God is sadhu sangha. This is the next step after Vaishnava, is sadhu sangha. And like Prabhupada talks about here in this verse, that in the purport, that one has to receive this sound, mantra murti, from a guru. One has to get the path, one has to have some association with a sadhu. And not just a sadhu, but a sadhu you take as your guru. Not just, oh, you're a nice sadhu, and I may listen to you, I may not listen to you, but some sadhu that you're going to listen to. That does not mean, by the way, somebody just a week ago was saying that somebody was very proud. I follow my guru blindly. So I said, but Prabhupada says in the purport to Bhagavad Gita 4.34 that one should not follow blindly. He says blind following is what? Condemned. So if someone is very proud of doing something that Prabhupada condemns, that is a little odd. And I said, what do they mean by following blindly? And they said, oh, that probably means they don't ask any questions. And I said, Aibo. Aishna. And I said, but Krishna personally says, Sadvani Prani Prashtina, that one should ask questions. That's Krishna's direct order, and one should ask questions. And Prabhupada's direct order that one should not follow blindly. But in any case, one has to first take up association with a sadhu. And this is just ordinary. We can understand if you want to learn anything, especially if you want to learn something that's beyond the reach of your senses. I believe that there's a God. You know, I believe that somebody built this temple. Well, who built the temple? If I want to meet them, I need to find someone who knows. And how am I going to do that? I usually will ask questions and I listen to the answer. Isn't that the general process? Or maybe I type it in and I read the answer. Similar process, is that correct? If I want to find out something that's beyond my immediate sense perception, then I have to go to somebody who knows. So why does this require some sacrifice? Why does it require some sacrifice to get sadhu sangha? Adishraddha doesn't require practically any sacrifice. And I think this is one reason why Vishnu Chakravarti Thakur says that there's no anartana vritti that takes place on the platform of Adishraddha. There's no purification that's happening. But why sadhu sangha? Why as soon as you take shelter of sadhus, and especially once you take shelter of a guru, why is there some sacrifice involved? Does anybody remember?
Is it that they'll ask you to give up something and do something you might not immediately?
Yeah, they'll definitely ask you to give up something. Or some things will give you up. Just like I'm sure we experienced that when we first started association with the devotees, unless we were born in a devotee family, so those of us born in a non-devotee family, that as soon as we started associating with the devotees, either we gave up something or other people gave us up, yes? Some of our friends, maybe some of our family members, I mean, one of my sisters said to me, I'm never talking to you for the rest of my life, which she kept that up for 10 years. So, and people come with this anxiety. When people are starting to associate with the guru, to engage in transcendental sound, to find God, then they'll come and say, well, what do I do about my husband, my wife, my mother-in-law, my friends, my co-workers? Somebody doesn't like me anymore. There starts to be a little bit of sacrifice. You're changing your path. But without going to a guru and a sadhu, how are you going to understand who is God, actually? Like, I can look at the artwork here, oh, very nice artwork, beautiful artwork. But if I want to know who is the artist, just like some of you may know Pratapanam and Jayashree in Sydney, some of you may know them. So we have a project that we do in Govardhan, Radhakund, and Shamkund. Actually, if you want to know about it, you can go to Prananath Prabhu's Facebook page, and he's just posted, or his YouTube channel, and he's just posted an incredible video with magnificent, magnificent aerial footage of Govardhan and Varshana and Manasapavanagat, and what else do we have in there? So many of the places around Vrindavan and Govardhan, and you just, heart-stirring. Anyway, so Jayashree and Pratapanam, they gave us some donation some time ago, especially if you look at that video, if you look at the befores and afters, you'll see a before and after of a place called Manasapavanagat. This is at Shamkund, right by the Sangram between Radhakund and Shamkund, and it's said here that Srimati Radharani and her friends bathe at noon every day, and that Radharani gave a benediction that anyone who bathes there will develop love for Krishna like she has. It's also called Pancha Pandava Ghat because the Pandavas are there in the form of trees doing meditation. So the place was a complete wreck, and Pratapanam and Jayashree gave some donation from their business to fix it up. So I was talking with my daughter and saying, you know, Jayashree and Pratapanam, they're maybe interested in doing something else for the project. And then I said, have you ever met Jayashree? She said, no. And I said, well, you've met her daughter. She said, I have. I said, yes, we were just in Mayapur. We all went to Bhaktivinoda Thakur's house together. She said, oh, that was her daughter? I didn't know that was Jayashree's daughter. She said, I shared a room with her at the Japa retreat, and all that time I never knew she was Jayashree's daughter. She says, oh, this is the value of hearing. like if the head of the New Zealand government were to be in this room right now, but I don't know who that person is. I wouldn't know who they were, right? I could just talk to them and then, oh, did you know who you were talking to? No, I didn't know who I was talking to. Who is that? You have to hear. So if that's true even materially, that you can share a room with someone and you don't even know who they are. You understand? You can talk to someone and you don't know anything about who they are if you don't hear. So what to speak of God, who's not perceivable except by his effects. Except by, just like we don't perceive the air except by its effects. We perceive the air because we can breathe without difficulty and because it moves the plants and things. But otherwise, I don't. Do you perceive the air? Although it's here. So we don't perceive Krishna generally, Atashri Krishna Namadi, Nambabed Rahamindriya. But if we hear, you go to school and you hear, there's air. It's made up of nitrogen and right? And you're breathing it and it's putting pressure on your skin, and then you understand. So this requires some first sacrifice to hear. Also, I think a sacrifice of some humility. That one has to admit that I don't know everything. That I have to hear from somebody else. Even though regularly we're all hearing from everybody all the time about everything, who can be independent in their knowledge. And then what is the guru going to do to tell you how to find God? So here it says he's going to give you transcendental sound. He's going to give you, Prabhupada says, transcendental sound and give you direction how to chant that. Of course we know in the Brihad Bhagavatamrita that Gopakumar got this direction in very small increments. Have you read the, who here has read the Brihad Bhagavatamrita? Oh. Wonder, incredible book. If you like stories, most people like stories. If you like stories, it's an amazing story. So Gopakumar, he got this mantra from his guru, and the guru just said, here's your mantra, and then the guru went into such ecstasy, he just fainted, and then he left. And then it was a long time later that Gopakumar met him again, and then the guru said, anything you desire while you chant this mantra, you will get. And then again the guru left, and gave him little bits of instruction, like every few years he would give him a little bit of instruction. So we get this sound representation, and here of course is the crux of this verse, mantra murtim amurtikam. So the Lord who has no material form, the Lord doesn't have a form made of earth, water, fire, air, and space. Or mind, intelligence, and ego. Although the Lord has thinking, feeling, and willing, his form is not made out of those things. His form is himself. We have a form that's different from ourself. We're the driver in a car. Right? But Krishna's not like that. Krishna's form is himself. And when Krishna changes his moods, he has different forms. Like Prabhupada writes in Teachings of Lord Chaitanya, that Krishna's thinking becomes his pastimes. When he thinks, I'm a coward boy, then he has coward boy pastimes. When he thinks, I'm a great prince, then he has prince pastimes. When he thinks, oh, I want to go swimming, then he has fish pastimes. And different moods. You know, when he becomes angry, then he has a form of anger, as in Singhadev. Or when he's stunned, he has a form like Jagat. Or Mahaprabhu also, when he becomes stunned in ecstasy, he takes this turtle-like form, right, where his limbs retract into his body. But he doesn't have a material form. You know, our material form, it somewhat reflects our moods, isn't it? And our form changes a little bit. Or we may change our clothing if we want to go swimming. But we don't change our form like that. Because we're different from this form. It's not us. So therefore Krishna can be said to have amurtinam. He doesn't have a form. He doesn't have a form. Something like when Krishna was play arguing with Rukmini, and he said, you shouldn't be married to me because I'm penniless. I don't have any money. I don't have any possessions. So generally, when a woman gets married, she wants a man who has some money, or at least a job. Why? Because generally in marriage there are children, and in children the woman, generally speaking, she goes through at least some period of time when she's dependent on someone else to maintain them. So that's her concern. So Krishna said, you shouldn't be married to me anymore because I can't maintain you. I don't own anything. Rukmini says, it's true you don't own anything because you are everything. You can't be said to be the owner if you are. So you don't have a form. Krishna doesn't have a form. It is Krishna. His form is a manifestation of his rasa. It's completely different situation than what we think of. We have this duality that I am a person who has a form, and my form is, as Prabhupada talks about here, right? Amurti also means without difficulty. Murti also means difficulty. Is our form a little difficult? Who here finds their form to be a little difficult? Who here finds their form to be very difficult? difficult. I mean, it does a lot of things that we want it to do, but it doesn't do everything we want it to do. I would love to be able to just fly, you know. Wouldn't that be cool? I had a dream like that the other night that I was sitting and chanting Hare Krishna in my dream, and all of a sudden I just started flying. But I tried to do it when I woke up, and it didn't work. It was really frustrating. I sat down, Hare Krishna, Hare Krishna, and I was still rooted to the earth. So this form is just difficulty. You have to maintain it all the time, right? You have to keep feeding it and watering it and bathing it. You know, it's really troublesome. Having a nice place for us to sleep and so many things. All right, Krishna. So Krishna doesn't have a form like that. He doesn't have to have a form that he has to maintain and that simply gives him trouble. You know, it doesn't get sick, it doesn't get old, and etc., etc., etc. So the guru reveals, how do you find this person with no material form? Because we can't perceive things. I mean, we're not even very good at perceiving material things. You know that, right? I mean, we don't really know that. We actually believe that we're very good at perceiving material things. We trust our senses a lot. So when I teach research at Bhaktivedanta College, one of the things we teach about is the downsides of research, what's restricted with your senses. So we usually show some videos of illusions, of things that fool people, how people have been fooled in different scientific experiments. But someone sent me an article the other day. It was evidently something that went all over the internet. Someone took a picture of a dress. I remember I saw it, and it said, is this yellow, and is this white and gold, or blue and black? And I didn't pay any attention to it at all. I thought, well, of course it's white and gold. Why are people asking this question? And then someone sent me an article about it and said, oh, this will be useful in your teaching. And I read it, and I'm like, wow. It was a blue and black dress. And I looked at it and saw it was white and gold. And evidently people were having huge arguments about it. You know, you think it's just an odd, what color is this? This is what color. It wasn't even some sort of an engineered optical illusion. You know, we think I can perceive things. Or, you know, there's some people that have synesthesia and they can see music, you know? They can see music, they can taste colors. We can all do this in our spiritual form, of course. This is what Krishna can do. He can look at food and eat it. He can taste food by looking at it. But most of us with these forms, I can't see music. I don't taste colors. I don't hear colors. But obviously it's there. Well, you know, there's some people have an extra receptor in their eye, and they can see millions of times more colors than most of us can. They're actually there. Some of them are not there. Other people can see them. Or animals, you know, dogs that can hear things. Or you go to the airports now, there's these dogs. Dogs that are sniffing for bombs, dogs that are sniffing for, you know, drugs, dogs that are sniffing for food, even in a country like this. But I can't do that. I can't walk around the airport. Is there a bomb? You know? So my senses are so, even for material things, my senses are so imperfect. And frankly, God could be sitting right here and I wouldn't necessarily know he was God, like my daughter didn't know, well, this girl is Jayashree's daughter. You understand? In fact, that happened. You say, no, if God was here, I would certainly know it was God. But Krishna appeared on earth 5,000 years ago, and not everybody knew he was God. Well, maybe if he showed me his universal form, but Krishna showed his universal form to Duryodhana, and Duryodhana said, oh, some magic tricks. Arrest him. showing I'm the whole universe, you know? Arrest him. I'm madness. And we think, oh, well, I wouldn't do that. So we learn from the guru how to see the unseen Lord. Mantramurti, in the form of a mantra. Again, this verse is coming after the previous verse because Narayana has just taught us a mantra. And this is starting, of course, going from Sadhusanga now to Bhajana Kriya. Now one has left the material path and is actually walking on the spiritual path. You know, Anushtha, you're just like, oh, there's a spiritual path over there, high spiritual path. And Sadhusanga, you're kind of looking towards it and hanging out with the sadhus. You sort of changed your orientation. But now Bhajana Kriya, you're walking on the spiritual path, and now this certainly requires some sacrifice. In fact, Krishna says, of all sacrifices, I am japa. Of all sacrifices, I am japa. Why is that? Well, before we get to that, Prabhupada is also saying that in addition to getting the sound from the guru and getting instructions how to chant the sound from the guru, one also has to rely on that. Do you remember it was the very end of the purport? Prabhupada said we also have to get what in order to understand the word? Realization from? Advanced devotees, yes, and in addition, was the very end of the purport. The last few sentences, the last paragraph. Anybody can remember? I was talking about the Shastra, and we have to go to the Shastra. And he particularly said the Panchatrika system, which of course also involves deity worship. And he said that was more important. He said it's practical and suitable for this age of quarrel. Have you all noticed that it's an age of quarrel? Has anybody noticed that? Yes? And it said that Kali Yuga people quarrel just to quarrel. They don't quarrel over the topic, really. They don't care what the topic is. As long as it's something they can quarrel about, then they're happy. Have you experienced this? Or is this just my experience? Even in our Hare Krishna movement, we do this. Have you noticed this? Right? David Richardson and I were talking about this a little yesterday. You know, the people are quarreling over this and that theological point. I'm right. No, I'm right. No, I'm right. And meanwhile, nobody's making any progress on the spiritual path because they're just sitting on the side of the road quarreling. He says this Panchatrika system is more important than Vedanta for this age. Vedanta is very philosophical. And all we'll do with heavy philosophical things is quarrel about them. That's all we'll do. We'll take all these philosophical points and we'll just argue. My point is better than your, you know, my viewpoint is better than your viewpoint, and this viewpoint is better than this viewpoint. And Srila Prabhupada didn't do that. Srila Prabhupada didn't say, okay, everybody memorize this creed of beliefs to which everyone has to ascribe. Prabhupada didn't do that. Prabhupada didn't give us a list of, like, you know, 12 or 15 points that we all have to say, I believe this. No, that wasn't Srila Prabhupada's way of doing things. So the Panchatrika system is more relevant for this age of quarrel. It's a very practical system. You worship the deity, and of course, here particularly, you chant the holy name. So the Shastra is also there, because without the Shastra, you're not going to know if you have a bona fide guru. You're not going to know if you have a sadhu. You say, I'm going to go to a sadhu. I'm going to do sadhu sangha. How do you know if it's a sadhu? The Shastra is giving you the descriptions of who is a sadhu. Anyone tell me where we find these descriptions of who is a sadhu? Yes? Bhagavad Gita. Bhagavad Gita, where? Second chapter, when Arjuna specifically asks this question. What are the symptoms? How does he speak? What is his language? How does he sit? How does he walk? How can I recognize a sadhu? Where else in the Bhagavad Gita, in the Bhagavatam, any other places?
Chapter 16.
Chapter 16, the divine and demoniac nature. Where else? Yes?
Upadeshamrita.
Okay. Vachavega, Manasakodavega, and that. Where else do we get instructions? What is this? Teachings of Lord Kapila, as with the 26 qualities of a devotee. We have also a 14th chapter of Bhagavad Gita when Arjuna says, what's the symptoms of one whose consciousness is just merged into transcendence, also is there. We also have in the 12th chapter of Bhagavad Gita, where Krishna lists the qualities of those who are dear to him, and then scattered verses here and there, like Vinaya Sampani, Ramani, Gavi, Hasani, Sunichana, Supakita, Pandita, Samadarshan. We have different verses here and there that give us the qualities of Sada. The 11th canto also gives us the 26 qualities of a devotee. Mahaprabhu tells Sanatana Goswami the 9 symptoms of one who's in Bhava. So we need to study the scriptures. Right, David Richard Mars was telling me yesterday, we were talking mostly about book publication, and he said, so when you publish Manushiksha, we're working on Raghunath Das Goswami's Manushiksha with Bhakti Mataku's commentary. He says, when you publish the book, he said, the grahastas, they'll buy it, they'll put it on their shelf, and they won't read it. So Prabhupada would talk to the book distributors. You know, you're distributing the books and you're not reading them. Well, what does it say in this book? Oh, I don't know, I never read it. So Shastra means we should be reading the Shastras, and today there's no excuse. If you speak English and you're in the world in 2015, there is no excuse not to read the Shastras. Because first of all, you can get the Shastras on your phone. Most of you have a little phone or tablet or computer. Practically everybody's wired with something, or more. Most of you probably have 2 or 3 or 4 or 5 different devices. And you can get them, and the BBTE gives them to you for free, so you don't even have to pay anything for them. And then they're just there, and you can even listen to them. There's devotees who've recorded all the books in English. I mean, if you speak Czech, it's a little, you're out of luck, you know? Or if you speak, what is this, some of these clicking African languages, Swatisti or something, then, you know, you're in bad shape. But if you speak English, then you can listen to all the Srila Prabhupada's books, and anybody can do that, you know? While you're taking a shower, you can listen to Srila Prabhupada's books. While you're in the car, you can listen to Srila Prabhupada. What else are you doing? So everybody can be regularly reading Srila Prabhupada's books. Just put them on your phone. Before you eat, read a screen. You know, one screen. Before you have breakfast, before you have lunch, whatever. Because without the Shastra, we're not going to know who is a sadhu. We're not going to know. So we're not going to know this. We're not going to get the mantras. Okay, so we've gone now to Vajra Kriya. We've taken shelter of the sadhu, we've taken shelter of the Shastras. So why does this require some sacrifice, getting back to God? Why does Krishna say this japa chanting is a sacrifice? Anybody want to be honest enough to talk about this? Or do we not want to be honest enough to talk about this? You have to control your mind. I mean, it's one thing when your best buddy since childhood says, if you're not going to go to the pub anymore, I'm not going to talk to you. That's a heavy sacrifice for some people. And it's a heavy sacrifice for some people to listen to a guru, and the guru says, do this, you know. But controlling your mind, wow. Chanchalahima Nakrishna. I visited a non-devotee school many years ago. I used to regularly visit schools. And the children had done some artwork that was up on the wall. And one of them said, I follow my mind wherever it goes. So we are all accustomed to doing that. And just like sometimes you see people walking the dog, but really the dog is walking them. Yes? You've seen this? My father had a dog. Sometimes I see devotees with dogs. I'm sorry, I hope I'm not offending anybody here. But anyway, I grew up with a dog. My father had a dog. And I used to have to walk it after school, which is one of the many reasons why I'm very happy that I don't have a dog. And as a young child, the dog usually walked me. I wasn't usually walking the dog. And one time, the dog started running me. I was downhill, and the dog was running. And I was 9 years old, and the dog was pulling me down the hill. And then all of a sudden, the dog decided that it didn't want to run anymore. And it stopped right in front of me. At which point, I fell over the dog. And because I was holding the dog with my right hand, I fell on my left hand and broke my arm. At which point, I was then stuck on the street with a broken arm. And my parents weren't home, and I was there for 2 hours until the high school kids came back on their bus, and one of them walked past me and rescued me. So this is what happens when you follow your mind wherever it goes. And although we've all had this experience, that when my mind takes me for a walk, I sometimes trip over it and break my arm and lie crying on the street for 2 hours until somebody rescues me, still we don't want to control our mind. we consider this a very great sacrifice. It was just, actually, we gave a class in Wellington, it's actually Bhaktivedanta Swami's class, on attentive chanting through the process explained in the third and the 11th canto of liberation through sound. And I was thinking, you know, in many cases, it's easier for us to chant just on the external mechanical platform and then simply say Krishna consciousness doesn't work and japa doesn't work, rather than actually meditate on our japa. You know, it's much easier. Just chant only with the mouth, let the mind and the heart go wherever it wants to go, and make, practically speaking, no progress after 5, 10, 15, 20, 30 years, and then just say, well, the Hare Krishna mantra doesn't work. Oh, well, I still like Krishna, I guess I'll kind of keep hanging around the society. You know? That's easier than controlling your mind, isn't it? So it's a sacrifice. Why else is chanting a sacrifice? Yes? It takes time. And we don't have any time today. Isn't that fascinating? Even though we have all these devices that are supposed to save us time. You no longer have to get in an ox cart and travel for a few hours if you want to talk to your friend. You just pull your little gizmo out of your pocket and type them a little message in 2 seconds. And that should have saved us a lot of time. You don't have to grind your spices. You can just do it in a little electric grinder, or you can, for goodness sakes, just go to the shop and buy them. There's one place where Prabhupada's saying that when he was a little boy, that you couldn't even go to the market usually and buy something like rice. You know, you had to grow it. You can not only now go and buy rice, you can buy a whole meal. You can buy a whole meal. And now there's this thing, at least in America, I'm sure it will come to New Zealand now, called magic, where you just text this one number and you say, I want this. It will cost this amount of money. Okay. And they deliver it to your door, whatever it is. They say, as long as it's not illegal. You know, I want this. Oh, here it is. So we should have lots of time. But I don't have time. How can I give? You know, I want to find God. Yes, I want to find God. I would love to find God. I'd love to have a relationship with God, but I don't have a couple hours a day for that. Fascinating, isn't it? I don't have a couple hours a day. So that's sacrifice, yes? How else is it a sacrifice? Yes?
Not so much taste.
Not so much taste, yes. So especially if one is chanting mechanically. Actually, there's one place, I don't know if I should say this. Anyway, I hope I won't discourage anybody. There's one place where Prabhupada said, if you're just simply chanting mechanically and your mind is wandering, he said, then it is useless. Then he has a long pause and he says, or it will take some time. So if one is chanting mechanically, because let's be frank, it's a lot easier to chant mechanically, then there's no taste. And then you have the sacrifice of doing something for a couple hours a day that is boring. Then it becomes like hanging out with somebody you don't really want to talk to. Have you ever had that experience? And sometimes you're stuck. You're just stuck for whatever reason with this person that is completely boring. Uh-huh. Yeah. And you're trying to take your mind someplace else and just listen barely enough to the other person so that you won't agree to buy them a diamond or something like that. So then there becomes no taste. Let's say you were chanting really nicely. Let's say you're one of those members of the Hare Krishna movement who does decide to sacrifice control of their mind. Then what is the sacrifice in japa? Yes! One has to give up one's material desires. And what is the material desire ultimately we have to give up? This doesn't mean you have to give up your desire, you know, for a new watch or something. Generally people think like that. Giving up material desires means I can't have a car, I can't have a watch, I can't have a family. What's the real material desire one has to give up? Yes?
To be the
controller and the enjoyer. And my dear friends, we probably don't want to give that up. Okay? We want to have a relationship with Krishna where I'm still the controller and the enjoyer. This is most religions are like this. Dear God, please do this and this and this, like this, in this way, at this time, in this way, okay. Thank you, my servant. Yes. Oh, look what Krishna arranged for me. Woo-hoo. What a good servant. Better than the magic guy I can text on my phone. Krishna can even bring me illegal things, whatever. So that's the real sacrifice, and that's the real reason why we hesitate to involve our mind and our heart in our chanting. Because we all have experienced that when we do that, we are confronting our false ego. Very quickly, we are confronting that Krishna is actually the enjoyer, and Krishna is actually the center. And how surprising that I'm not the center of the universe. But that is the only way one can find God. It's the only way one can find God. The main way is through this mantramurti, the sound of the mantra. It was just this morning, Chaitanya Mahaprabhu is instructing this one householder. And he was saying, you know, the most important thing is to chant Hare Krishna. And he says, if you're chanting the Lord's name, then all the other 8 processes of devotional service are naturally included. Everything is included. I know we may have a final question with all of this, that if the way to find God is to go to a sadhu and to read the shastra and be absorbed in the mantra, all of which involves some sort of sacrifice, well, what kind of a God is this who's the Yajna Purusham, who's just this big sacrifice guy? That doesn't sound very much fun. I mean, okay, the material world is pretty miserable. It's pretty miserable. You work 5 days for 2 days off, and on your 2 days off, you have to fix your garage door and mow your lawn. And, you know, you work for 8 hours a day, but then you're also commuting, and then you have to eat, and then you have to fix the leaky pipes, and you have maybe an hour to enjoy. Maybe. Maybe 2 hours if you're really lucky. And then even your 2 hours of enjoyment, sometimes it just doesn't work out, right? Sometimes it's just not actually enjoyable. Whatever you choose to do with your 2 hours. You choose to watch some movie and you go, oh, it was a terrible movie. You know, whatever it may be. And then after all that, the body gets sick. And the body gets old. Sorry, those of you who are young, old people are not a different species. Which I really believed when I was a teenager on some level. You know, I'm a young person and they are old people. And old age is not pleasant. It has some pleasant things about it. Definitely, old age has some pleasant things about it. But overall, it is very unpleasant. And then death means everything you invested into your whole life, you have to leave. And go someplace you don't know where you're going. Just imagine, you know, it's like if some army invaded and came at gunpoint and said, okay, walk away from your house and leave. Where am I going? I'm not going to tell you. So we know material life's not very happy, but we can say, well, this is something. Here's Burgess Week's lasagna. I get that. I get something. Whereas if I go to Krishna, he's just the Yajna Purusha. It's just going to be a bunch of sacrifice. First my friends and my family reject me. Then I have to surrender to a guru. I have to spend my time reading the shastras. And then I have to meditate on this sound and control my mind. Oh, no. And I have to confront my material desires and spend, you know, a few hours of my day, my very valuable day that I wanted to do so many other very important things. And what do I get? Just a bunch of surrender to this Yajna Purusha. And then I'm sure, that as I go on, he's just going to ask more sacrifice, right? That just Bhajana Kriya. What's going to happen at Nista and Ruchi and Shakti? You know, then I'm really going to have to sacrifice. Oh, no. We might consider. So here's the Yajna Purusha. Does he look like he's sacrificing? What does he look like? What's he doing all day? What is this Yajna Purusha doing all day? He's just enjoying. Hey, most people worship God as the king. We worship him as the prince. He's just enjoying. You know, it's not any trouble for him to herd the cows. He just plays his flute, he's playing games all day. Right? Dancing with the girls, playing tricks on the girls. And then he's the pet son of his parents, their only child. Beautiful. Garden of fully conscious beings. The grass is conscious, the houses are conscious, all desires are immediately fulfilled. This is the form of sacrifice. What is that? That's because there's a secret. And the secret is that real pleasure is found in sacrifice. This is called our Sanatana Dharma. Our Sanatana Dhamma, Jivaraswari Pari Krishnara Nityadasa, is to be a servant. A servant sacrifices. A servant is giving. But please tell me, who is the biggest giver? Who gives the most? Krishna. He's such a giver that he gives even to atheists and scorpions. So in America, we have these plants called poison ivy and poison oak. Do you have these kind of entities here? It's such a pious place. So there's poison ivy and poison oak. If you touch them, you just touch the plant, you get a bad rash. And it itches for about 2 or 3 weeks. And it itches so badly, you can't sleep. You know, you wake up in the middle of the night and just put ice on it, you know, and horrible. Just touch it. Do you know people like that? You just touch them and they would like to make you suffer for 3 weeks just by touching them. But Krishna gives them rain. Krishna gives them sunshine. Krishna gives these poison ivy plants rain and sunshine. He's the biggest giver. Because it's by giving we find happiness, not by taking. So when we willingly sacrifice from the heart, then we find something called love. And it's then that we find the form of he who has no material form. It's not exactly that we find the form of God who has no material form just by following some ritual in a ritualistic way. Just, okay, I'm going to join a religion and I'm going to associate with religious people. I'm going to go through some initiation ceremony. I'm going to learn what it says in the scriptures and I'm going to spend some time every day saying these words. That's not really what it means. It means I'm going to be giving. I'm going to be trying to, we talked about this a little yesterday, and Prabhupada talked a lot in the purport about rasa, that we're going to try to imbue all these things with giving, with love. And if we do that, then Krishna becomes very interested, just like we're interested in people who love us. Right? Is that correct? If someone loves us, we're interested. That's how my top president's wife tricked me into getting married. I didn't want to get married. I was like, I don't want to get married. I just want to be a preacher. And then she said, well, there's one of the brahmacharis wants to marry you. And he's a senior devotee, which meant at that time he'd been in the movement for 3 years. And he's the temple treasurer. It's a good catch. And he's in love with you. And then I was like, oh, who's in love with me? It's natural, right? We're interested. If somebody's in love with you, you're interested. Somebody likes you. So God is also like that. I mean, we're interested even if so. some little creature, some animal likes us, we become interested. We used to have slugs in our garden. They were eating all of our plants, so we got some ducks to eat the slugs. And it's funny, it was the kids and I who took care of the ducks. My husband never took care of the ducks. We fed them and we gave them water, we gave them everything. He didn't do anything for them, but somehow they loved him. They could recognize the sound of his vehicle, and as soon as it would come around the corner, they would waddle to the gate, and he'd be so touched. He'd say, oh, the ducks like me. That's why people keep dogs, you know that. That's why they keep dogs. The dog is usually more affectionate than the family members. Right? The husband comes home, the wife doesn't always say, oh, you're home. A lot of times she says, oh, thank God you're home. The pipes burst and I'm so tired. Would you watch the kid? Oh, I can't take this anymore. Right? And the man's like, why did I get married? So he keeps a dog. And he comes home and the dog doesn't say this, you know. The dog just says, oh, you're home. So Krishna is this, that Krishna, if we have some love, we're giving Krishna, I'm changing my association out of love for you because I really want to find you. I'm associating with the sadhus, I'm accepting a guru because I want to find you. I'm reading the scriptures because I want to find you. I'm sitting down and giving you an hour and a half, 2 hours, 3 hours, 4 hours a day just to be with you because I want to love you, I want to know you. And my dear Lord, I'm going to sacrifice putting myself at the center, and I'm going to put you at the center at least for some time every day. And then Krishna says, oh, here I am. And that way one can see the form of the Lord. Darshana. Perfectly. Sa samyak darshana. Such a person, sa samyak darshana, such a person will perfectly see. So, do we have time for questions today? Yesterday we had no time for questions. Do we have time today for questions? Yes? Anybody? Questions, comments? Yes, please.
The mechanical chanting. Say, you know, like the Prabhupada said that we should chant 24 hours a day. So say, for example, like chanting 16 minutes where it seems to the depth of the day of chanting mechanical because we do so many things and blowing and worrying.
You know, you hear this question a lot. I don't think mechanical... Oh, you didn't hear the question. You didn't hear the question. So I'll repeat it. By the way, is this mic working better than yesterday?
Yeah?
Okay. It's a little funny to have it on if you like. I feel like I'm really wired. If you can hear, it sound isn't echoing so much? Okay, good. So he asked the question, I can chant my 16 hours attentively, but Prabhupada says to chant 24 hours a day, and the rest of the day I may be chanting mechanically. So mechanically means only your mouth is engaged and not your mind and your heart. But you can chant with your mind and your heart while you're doing anything. Yes? We all have this experience that if we have some attachment to something or someone, we can think of that something or someone while we're doing other things. Everybody has, who has this experience? Okay, I think it's a universal experience. Attachment or aversion. You know, if you're worried about something. You know, my boss said they want to talk to me. The town president, the head of the Brahmachari Ashram, whatever, they said they want to talk to me at 10 o'clock. Uh-oh, maybe I'm in trouble. And you're doing other things and you're thinking about that. Yes? Can we do that? Yes? If you've ever fallen in love, right, you know that you could be teaching a class on, you know, differential equations and you're thinking of that boy or that girl. Everybody has this experience? So it's a question of attachment. Maya Shakta Manavanta. There has to be some attachment. If there's no attachment, then it is mechanical. So therefore, we're supposed to be growing and building our attachment. But thank you. Very nice question. Anybody else? Yes, please.
In the beginning, you were saying that we may believe in something, but we don't actually do it. So let's take this example of japa there. We know we're supposed to chant about 16 rounds, but we're not doing it.
Mm.
What can we do to fix that problem?
So people believe they're supposed to chant 16 rounds, or maybe they even made a promise to chant 16 rounds, but they're not actually doing it. So, Prabhupada says that everything is motivated by some sort of rasa. in the preface to the Nectar of Devotion, that whatever we do, we're motivated by some sort of rasa, some sort of enjoyment that we'll get something out of something. So we will do whatever we feel brings us the most enjoyment, and therefore there has to be some rasa. So at the very bottom level, a person who's chanting just mechanically, what rasa are they getting out of this? Someone who took a vow, I'm going to chant 16 mantras, but they're just chanting mechanically, they're not even trying to focus their mind. What rasa are they getting? There's 12 rasas. Anyone have any idea what rasa they're getting? There is a rasa there that a person is getting out of saying, I chant my 16 rounds every day, even though I never listen to them, and it's just a boring job. Yes?
Shanta?
Well, shanta is real peace. So you have to be chanting at least mentally to get shanta. Yes, who said that? Wow. I was thinking, nobody is going to guess this. He said chivalry, viraras. So viraras has three parts. One part of viraras is the sportsman, the happiness you get from some sportsmanlike fight. Not a nasty fight, but a sportsmanlike fight, where you're just as happy if the other person wins as if you win, that kind of game. Another part of viraras is charity, the happiness you get when you give something. Oh, I've helped this person. I gave this person some charity and now they're helped. There's a kind of rasa in that. And the other part is dharma. The happiness you get from being good. There's a happiness from being good, yes? So in Rajagun, that's a happiness from being good, hoping that I'll get something from being good. Other people will notice, she always chants her 16. What a good devotee. So that's very much as viraras in Rajagun. Or, okay, all right, if I'm just a good devotee, I'll go back to Godhead. If I'm just good. If I just mechanically chant my rounds because I promised and I'm a good devotee, I'll go back to Godhead. So that's also viraras in Rajagun. I'm making some sort of a bargain with Krishna. And then there's viraras in Sattvagun, which is just I feel good about myself. I don't care if anybody else notices and I'm not trying to buy something from Krishna. But this the feeling you have internally, you know, I'm a good person. Yes, I'm good. You know, the feeling you get when you're forgiving, when you do the right thing, and you know, nobody else notices you, but you're like, yes. So that's very much in santara. So there is some rasa that people get even from chanting mechanically. But we want to have a rasa that's very much with Krishna. We don't even want to be on sattvagun. So if you want to go from I believe that chanting my 16 rounds is something I should do to actually doing it, one has to be getting some rasa from it. There's no other alternative. There's just, we will only do those things that bring us some sort of rasa. Now sometimes we do things that bring us material, ghastly rasas. It's not all wonder and comedy. But there has to be some. There has to be some taste. We will simply not continue to do something that doesn't give us a taste. If you come every day at 9 o'clock for prasadam and there's never anything to eat there, after a while you will stop coming. It's just what it is. I mean, unless you're really foolish. Like there's a story that people cry over of the street dog. Everybody always kicked him. True story. And one day, one man at a restaurant gave the dog something to eat, the first time anybody had given the dog something to eat. And the next day, the man died. And that dog came to the man's grave every day at that same time, hoping to get something to eat. You know, but most of us won't do that. I mean, unless we're as foolish as a dog. Even most dogs won't do that. They'll give up after a week or two. Well, I guess that was a one-off thing. So there has to be some, we have to get some taste. If there's no, as Prabhupada talks about in Nectar Devotion, there's no bhakti rasa. It's the bhakti rasa that we're aiming for. In fact, Rupa Goswami says the qualification to begin bhakti is some taste. We have some. It's not that we don't have any. Everybody in here has some taste for Krishna. At least in Sattva-guna. At least. taste. And I'm sure we've all had some real taste of love suffering. I'm sure. I have no doubt about it at all. Even if it was just Krishna giving you a free sample. I'm sure. So you want to go for that and nourish that, especially in japa. Get some. It's about a relationship with the person. You're basically spending your time with the person and with the most wonderful person, who's Akhila Rasamrita Murti, who's the form of all rasas. So I think the only real cure is that one has to get some pratyakshavagamam dharmam, so one has to get some direct experience, param drishvani vartate. I don't really think there's any other long-term cure. You know, we can talk about, and we do talk about, making practical arrangements, like waking up early. You know, David Ritamaras has said to me, you really have to help these women who have children to get their vows done. And people say, how did you do it when you had children? I said, I went to Mangal Arati to get them. That makes it a lot easier. It's so nice to see some mothers with children this morning at Mangal Arati. So, you know, it's really easy. If you go to Mangal Arati every day, what else are you going to do? But chanting rounds, you know, you don't have a lot of other things to do. So we can talk about practical arrangements like that and having good company and all these sort of things, but ultimately there has to be a taste. We already have that. It's something like, you know, people in a marriage that's having trouble, notwithstanding some, assuming there's no criminal activity going on. It's a question of reviving a taste that was already there, correct? And our relationship with Krishna is already there. I was just hearing Prabhupada say that this morning. He said, just like you want to move a car. He said, if you want to move a car that's stuck, you get out and you push it. He said, but at a certain point, the car has to go on its own energy. You can't keep pushing it. He said, all of us have a relationship with Krishna. It's already there. That's the only real solution. You know, just to have Rajagun Vira Ras is not going to... It's not what we're looking for. Prabhupada said that kind of chanting just gives you the pains and pleasures of the material world. Then you can come back again and think, I'm a very righteous person. You know, there's that purport in the Bhagavad Gita where Prabhupada says, take birth over and over again as this, and one of them is a saintly man. Do you remember reading that in the purport? Going, oh, what is that all about? It says, sometimes it's a saintly man, sometimes it's a bug. I'm a very religious person. Okay, we could take one more. Is that all right? Yes?
Regarding what you were just explaining, if you approach japa wanting... trying to experience
the
taste, and how can it be also unmotivated?
Ooh, what a lovely question. I love these questions. She said, if you approach japa wanting some taste, how can it be unmotivated? Because that's what Krishna wants you to have. That is what pleases Krishna. We're trying to please Krishna. How are we trying to please Krishna? Well, he says, patram pushpam palam tayoyome bhakti prachiji. Do you really think, I mean, no disrespect to the garland makers and the deity dressers, but do you really think that Krishna is pleased with a flower? Is that what we really think? Or water? A little tiny symbolic cup of water? Is that what we really think? What is it that Krishna is pleased by? The love. What does love mean? So if you said to somebody, I assume you have people in your life with whom you have some loving relationship, correct? I hope everybody does. If you don't, may you please have a loving relationship with somebody in your life. I'm supposed to have love. Prabhupada said the purpose of the Hare Krishna movement is to facilitate the six loving exchanges between the devotees. So I hope you have some loving relationships with the devotees. So if you went to some devotee with whom you have a loving relationship and you said, when I'm in your company, I get no pleasure. I do not get any pleasure or enjoyment from being in your company. Would that please them? I'm coming here to be with you. but I'm not going to enjoy it. You can be assured that I will not enjoy being with you. And if I even start to enjoy being with you, I'm going to stop it. What gives us the most happiness? That somebody likes us. I mean, in the material world, because we see all of our bad qualities, it's kind of astonishing if anybody likes us, I find. I'm always very surprised. You actually like me? How is that possible? And it always amazes me that anybody could like me, having seen all the black gunk in my heart on a regular basis. But that's what thrills us. Somebody loves me.
Yeah.
And that somebody likes to be with me. It's like many years ago, I was here on my birthday, and most of the people who would know my birthday are in America, so for them, my birthday is the day after my birthday here. And this was pre-Facebook, when everybody knew when everybody's birthday was. And I was sitting in my room and thinking, nobody loves me. And then Dharma Setu and Karnakarna knock on my door. It was about 7 o'clock at night. A happy birthday. And they had a cake. I said, how did you know it was my birthday? They said, well, we were helping you apply for your visa, and you had your birthday written on the floor. And I was so touched. Somebody loves me. And somebody took some pleasure in doing something. And then she said, well, I didn't enjoy making this cake. I mean, there was no pleasure at all. I don't like coming to see you, but, I just felt I was obligated. Here's your cake. Therefore, what is Lord Chaitanya saying? When will my eyes be decorated with tears of love flowing constantly when I chant your holy name? When will my voice choke up? When will the hairs of my body stand on it at the recitation of your name? Is he praying for his own ecstasy for himself? Is Mahaprabhu saying, okay, Krishna, I want to hang out for you just to steal some ecstasy and run away with it? That's motivating. Okay, Krishna, give me the bliss. I don't care about you. Where's the bliss? Thanks for the bliss, buddy, bye. So that's motivating. But if I'm, Krishna, I want to experience the bliss of your presence. And he's like, wow, well, that's what I want you to experience too. Oh, in which of the Chaturshlokas is it? It's the last of the Chaturshlokas, 6. So 2, 9, 36, where Krishna says he enters into everything and yet does not. No, no. Which one is it? 35 or 36. Oh, help me, Krishna. Anyway, it's one of those. 2, 9, 35 or 2, 9, 36. I think it must be 35. Be 35, where Krishna says, just like the material elements enter into everything and do not enter into everything, so I enter into everything and I do not enter into everything. Vishnu Chakravarti Thakur's purport to that verse, go and read it. How Krishna is in the hearts of everyone, but he comes out of the hearts of his devotees, so they'll see him face to face, and he offers himself as the sense object for his devotees. That Krishna is thinking, may my devotees relish my beautiful form, may my devotees relish my wonderful smell, may my devotees relish my wonderful taste. Krishna wants us to relish him, not to enjoy him as an exploiter, but Krishna wants us to relish him alone. That's what he's looking for. That's how he wants us to chant. That's how he wants us to do our service. Thank you very much, Uddhava Bhakti.